What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
We are joined now by Maram Humaid, an Al Jazeera journalist reporting on Palestine with a focus on life in Gaza, human rights, and the impact of conflict on civilians. Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I know that time is precious. All right, well, let's get right into it. We've been covering the storm and the impacts on the storm this morning. We did that with our last guest from the Norwegian Refugee Council. One of the things that I did not get a chance to talk to her about that I want to touch on with you in more detail is infrastructure damage. As I was preparing for our conversation on the website of Al Jazeera, there was a pretty horrific video of a child who was buried under rubble from a collapsed building, not from machines driving by or even continued, as we know it's continuous Israeli bombardment, but because of the rain. Can you talk about the ways in which the rain is further impacting damaged infrastructure and what that means, both for like that young kid, but also me seeing mothers say, I know that at any moment this building could collapse on me, but I don't have anywhere else to go with my kids.
Yeah. Hi, Teresa, and hi for all your listeners. And it's my honor to be in your show today. And as I am talking, I've just came back from my work, and it's raining heavily outside. All the time, we were trying to drive from streets to another streets because most of the streets are destroyed, and so there were pools everywhere filled with water, and the situation is really very bad, especially for displaced people living in tents, and they don't have any preparations to receive this, you know, this like this winter with such heavy hearts actually, the last storm only just a few days ago. I've reported on many cases, and I was in the field just, you know, feeling helpless actually every time I go into I go to a tent and see the miserable life people are living during the past 2 years, worn out tents. They are living without, you know, appropriate shelter. They are living, they would just, you know, wake up at any moment and see that the whole place is soaked with water and with rain around them. And they would just spend the whole time trying to control, you know, the water, and while children and kids around shivering from, you know, the cold weather. It's really cold in Gaza. Anyone who would no one maybe visited Gaza before, but it's really cold, especially after evening time. I could see how the situation is dire with no solution. For myself, the last visit to the field, to the camps where a lot of displaced families live, I felt just, you know, helpless, and I voiced my helplessness in a video I posted on my Instagram, because it's so hard that you go to the field and hear and listen to the people who would say just, we are fed up from talking to cameras, we are fed up from talking to journalists. It's the same situation that's been repeated for the third year in a row without anyone intervening to change our reality. And I just feel helpless because I was trying just to capture their images and to see how the situation is looking like, and to report this in my articles and reflect it to the people. At the same time, I was really I know inside me that those people are in dire need for help and just for anyone to intervene and to change the reality. So, as a journalist, seeing these miserable scenes again and again being repeated and being circulated in social media without anyone intervening for the Palestinian people in Gaza to do anything, it's really sad, and it's really put a question mark on the value of our work and the value of posting and filming and just spreading images that everyone, I think, now in Gaza, and a lot of media materials were out during the past days. But again, this is not new. I'm covering winter for the third time in Gaza during the war. I covered the first winter and the second one last year, and this is the third one. And I'm visiting the same families, and I'm visiting the same people, and I'm seeing the situation is getting only worse. And this time it was worse because we were just witnessing a new tragedy of the buildings collapsing over the heads of Gaza's residents. And I know that many displaced families, because they just fed up from living inside tents, and that, like, it's very bad to live in a tent in the heat and during the cold. So they go to the partially damaged places in order to live. And just they say that at least there is a ceiling under our, like, above our heads. But they know that this ceiling may just fall over their heads at any moment, and they know that, but they don't have a choice. Sometimes they don't have a tent or a proper place to live in. So this time it was very sad because we reported on the killing of the death of 11 people because of simply it's not from the bombardment, it's not from the bombing, it's not from the war, it's from the collapsing buildings over their heads. I remember the last night, the last time we reported on the Nassar family in Sheikh Ridwan. It's in the north of Gaza, and their father went to buy bread for them, and when he came back, he found out that the same building where they were living was destroyed over the heads of his own family, his wife and his children. So, and they were killed in that collapsing. And one kid, 13 years old kid was survived that collapsing. So, again, the humanitarian situation in Gaza is deteriorating sharply, and it's the same. It's a long winter, and we still have like it's just the beginning, the start of winter in Gaza, and this is only the start. We are reporting on people being killed because of the collapsing buildings, and the civil defense, the Palestinian civil defense teams are just struggling to rescue people and to deal with the falling buildings, because anyone like knows that after the ceasefire, Israel didn't allow any of the needed equipment for rescuing people and for the civil defense to go with their to do their to do their job properly. So they were depending only on their own, like, their own hands, or and just simple equipment to just retrieve people and to retrieve bodies and to rescue people. And that's why we are hearing about increasing number of people dying because of the storm in Gaza. So thousands of residential buildings in Gaza were damaged by direct attacks and strikes during the war, and from the ground invasions and from the bombardments. And like it's like just It's very rare to find a standing building in Gaza that is not it's not affected by a bomb or by by a shell or so on. So people who don't have a choice, they went to live in such places, and until now we see people that are still living in these damaged homes because they don't have shelters to go to. So we have the heavy rain now exacerbating the damage, and winter also increases the problem with water seeps into the cracks, weakening the foundations and the structure, and also there is a lot of destruction beneath these buildings. So this also increases the sudden or the risk of the sudden collapses. And also we have the overcrowding. Many families are displaced in Gaza, and they go to such places, to these damaged homes to live in. And maybe this is stresses these weakening structures, as multiple families are often forced to live together in a single, house or a floor. We have such cases also of displaced people who are pitching their tents next to or even on the top of these of the ruins of these damaged buildings, and this exposes them to the fallen walls and concrete blocks during the storms. And we have two cases of those people who were killed because of the fallen walls that fell over them during the storm. But the case it's clear that displaced people do not have a place to go to or to leave, and they know the risks, but they can't deal with it. They have no other option, and they see the damaged homes as better shelter than the tents during the winter. And as you know, tents are not a solution. Tents are not a solution for people to live during the winter. People are calling for to allow the entry of the caravans and the residential units for them, because this is the most appropriate units for them to live in. So this is maybe the situation right now for the storm, and I think that unfortunately people and authorities are just warning that the death toll is likely to rise during this second storm, because there is no solution, and maybe the rainfall will continue to cause homes to collapse more and more.
I only have a couple of I really don't even have that because I've got to raise money. We're in what's called Fund Drive, where we ask the people to give us dollars so that we can continue to have conversations like this one. But I wanted to give you just a couple of minutes to talk about the fact, because you said, there's this feeling of helplessness that, like, no matter what you write, no one is doing anything. And I'm wondering that first of all, I want to say to you that what you write and these stories, they do matter. They matter. It makes it so that the news outlets here can't tell the lie, right? They can't tell the lies. It gives folks like me and other folks that are interested in truth telling actual information from the ground to share with the people so that the truth breaks through the lies. Because even here, even on the left-leaning so-called liberal media, they repeat Zionist propaganda. And so reporters like you and the stories that you tell are critical. So I just wanted to start with that. And then secondarily, I just wanted to, so I just, well, I didn't feel right to talk to a journalist in Gaza and not pay homage to the 300 journalists that have died doing what it have been murdered, not died, been murdered doing what it is you're doing. And yet you continue to report Israel's killed more journalists than any other country in any other conflict ever in the last 2.5 years. What keeps you going? Real quick, though, like 2 minutes.
Because I'm still in Gaza, I'm still alive, and I'm just capable enough to report on the story of my people. And for myself, I think that we Palestinian journalists are the maybe the most capable ones to tell the story and to keep reporting on what's going on. We lived the genocide, and we lived the horror and the suffering of the people, and we are the real voices of them. And we have the tools. We have also the platforms, and we are skilled enough to do this. So I keep going because my people needs my voice, and my voice is representing them no matter what. I know I feel helpless, but this won't bar me from continuing my reporting journey in Gaza. And I know it matters, but I think because I reported for 2 years, and the progress is somehow slow, and I'm seeing the suffering is being repeated many time and many time. We are talking about human beings. We are not talking about machines. So I feel that it's enough for them. But I have no choice. I need to continue this journey. And this is, also the same, the same determination of all of my colleagues. I was reporting actually today from Al-Aqsa Hospital, because we have no workplace. We don't have any access in our homes, maybe to internet and to electricity even, because I'm calling you from the darkness, as you.
Well, the internet, I think we've lost her, saying that she was reporting from Al-Aqsa Hospital. Okay, there you are. Okay, yeah, and yes, we do. I do. My listeners will eventually, when this video goes out, see the
And
dark.
that's why, and that's why we are living such a deteriorating conditions. Journalists are just among this, population of people, but they are continuing their message and their journey, just, trying to make a change and contributing to this story. And we hope that we can draw an end, a good end for it, and just to report on the bright side of this genocide ending very soon.
Madam Humaid, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Wishing you safety, and thank you for
Thank
your
you
work.
so much.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.